Welcome to Kodachi for Three, a bi-weekly podcast where three friends and passionate players discuss the world of Wraith. If you're looking for flesh and blood content, we've got it. Focusing on competitive play, community building, and yes, going off on plenty of tangents. From our favorite casual builds to the market, nothing is off limits. So sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for Kodachi for Three.
Welcome, welcome. We are Kodachi for Three, and we are finally welcoming back our third member, the long forgotten, but not actually forgotten. Also, his face is on camera. What more can you ask for? We have Drayton, and he's beautiful.
I don't know about beautiful, but I am back, and it is good to be back. I had some real-life things going on that just totally took me out of the game for a while there, and I'm glad to be back and glad to be playing.
Yeah, I suppose I should say that I am Adam, though people know at this point, I think, that I do the intro. We have Drayton, and then...
Always the third build member. Hi, I'm Shay.
So definitely not always the third build member. We had several guest speakers on, and you were never build behind them.
Yeah, there's always like a poignant pause.
You bring in the joke. Like, you're our joke segue. Me and Drayton don't do that, and so there's no possible way that we could really move it without it.
You're the plucky comic relief character that every show needs.
100%.
Yeah, no. I mean, favorite.
You're our Sokka.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an for metaphor here.
For going for Avatar things, I probably am more Bolin. It's like he's really trying. They're trying to make him the funny character, but everyone's like, I sure do miss the one from season one.
Shay.
Wow. So before Shay goes into too much of a shame spiral or self-deprecation, tonight we're going to be talking about the new pre-release that's coming up for Uprising. I want to preface that none of us were able to go to Las Vegas, which was such a bummer to me. We're going to do an interview with one of the judges who did go to Vegas, just talk about their experience and how you can get into judging at a competitive level in the future. But tonight we're just going to talk about, what do you do when you're going out to a sealed event? What do you do when you're going out to a pre-release event? And then maybe being a little more specific about what we might do this weekend for the Uprising pre-release. Now, of course, we're not professionals at this yet, so take it with a grain of salt. We'll come back with a better guide once we've all got a little bit more of our sea legs in the set, shall we say. But we have done a lot of reviews over these cards. We have looked into it quite a bit, so it's not like we're completely firing from the hip here. So... let's start with just some sealed advice. What are we thinking, guys?
Yeah, so it's important in every sealed event that you want to have some game plan of how you're going to win with whatever hero you might be on. So, for instance, let's say you're picking up Dramai. You're probably going to need to make some tokens, some little dragon babies that are going to pounce on your opponent's face. If you're playing with Faye, you're probably going to need to leverage go-again attacks or Fi. If you're playing Islander, you need to be using that arcane damage to hopefully do unblockable damage to trounce your opponent. But you want to make sure you have like some idea of like how each hero wins the game, because if you don't understand how the heroes win the game, then you can end up in a lot of awkward, like, trading scenarios where it's just like, all right, I poke at you, you block it out, you poke at me, I block it out, and you go in this endless loop forever if you don't really have a clear vision of how you're going to close the game. You can play the game great up until that point, but if you can't close it, you can't close it.
Getting fatigued.
And that's something one of our locals was talking about in a chat recently. It was like, how do you close a game? And you know, I mentioned that you gotta really talk about it from character to character, not just like in general, how do you close a game? Because even two fatigue decks, like Ninja Turtle versus, you know, old Bravo Fatigue, both want to close games very differently. And so depending on what your game plan is for how you win games, that's going to affect what you're doing.
The other thing to keep in mind that Sealed in particular airs toward people probably playing these dirtlier, more fatigue-y, more less spiky kind of decks, because like when in doubt, slap 35 to 40 cards and try to poke your opponent to death.
Now I will say I think that's less of an option in this particular set for a couple of reasons. There's not a lot of weapons in the set, meaning the only hero that even has a weapon is Fi. When I say has a weapon that has its own native attack that you can pitch for. So even though Fi is one of the most aggressive heroes that I've seen in a long time from her build, he is actually probably the best fatigue hero in this set as well. So if you were looking for a, you know, drop your opponent out of cards build, the ability to recur those Phoenix Flames as well as to swing that weapon is likely to be the best way to do that.
Now,
see, I think go ahead, Drayton.
I was gonna say, that being said, I mean, he does suffer from the ninja problem of a lot of his stuff says blocks for two, which makes those breakpoints a lot more difficult for him to cover up. And his things that do come in for three, he's really probably not wanting to block with, but if he has to in a pinch, he probably will. And Shay, you had something to comment?
No, similar vein. I actually think, Islander is probably poised better to be a turtle kind of hero. So much of her stuff is blocking for three. The fact that she's going to make the opponent, like, having to kind of be slower, burn more resources, anything she can do to just kind of, you know, gum up the wheels here, like, it's pretty natural. I also think her weapon is a, well, it's not a traditional, like, I can consistently poke you on my turn. She's going to, consistently tax you on her turn. That said, I also think that has the highest skill ceiling of the three heroes in this to, like, manage her and everything. So if you're a newer player, err on the side of ninja. Like, I think Fi has the lowest floor of the three heroes in this, where it's, like, at the bare minimum, I'm going to have a traditional cost curve that I would expect in this game. I have some blues, I have some yellows, I have some reds, and I'm just here to consistently do damage.
Yeah, another big thing is, you know, we've all seen these decks that are like, oh, I'm just going to go hyper aggro, zero cost for fours, reds, go again, nonsense. That usually doesn't string together as nicely as you want it to in your head in limited. You're going to want to play a lot more blues. I would probably recommend, especially if you're a newer player, have at least a third of your deck be blue, if not more. You can do a lot with blue cards. You would be shocked how often I've been down to just only blue cards in my deck, and as like an even like an aggro ninja build in a limited setting, and hey, go again for one, still can get you there sometimes. Sure. Because if it requires a block, it requires a block. So
If you can find it blue and it blocks for three, you're like, it slotted in. Like,
I think it's important to note that most of Fi's stuff costs one. And even recurring that Phoenix Flame is typically going to cost you unless you've pushed out an extremely long chain. And from what I can tell, even just seeing people test on, you know, webcam, Discord, that kind of games, you can really push with Fi when you probably shouldn't, meaning inefficiently. So there's no real reason to get that fourth chain link to bring it back for free most of the time.
I mean, if you look at it, though, so say you're swinging in, you have a zero strength or cost attack and a blue in hand, you can go zero with go again, sword, Phoenix Flame. And that's a traditional two card ninja, like, I blocked some damage and I was able to crack back disproportionately. So that's a thing to keep in mind, like, what your turn to turn, like, what your standard loop should look like. Don't let the delusion of magical Christmas land, like, cloud your mind. Look at what, like, oh, what's my bad turn look like? And if your bad turn can look like, oh, you know, attack, attack, Phoenix Flame, or something like that, then you're golden.
Yeah, honing in on Fi for a minute, since we've been talking about him a lot, it makes sense to just kind of, like, focus on him for a minute. You know, there's a lot of cards that have requirements on them in this set. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, like, if you have two or more Draconic Chain Links, or if you have four or more Draconic Chain Links, you know, all this stuff. Those cards are going to be great in Constructed. They're going to be less powerful in this setting. I'm not saying don't put any of them in your deck. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, though, is if I have to choose between a card that has conditional go again and a card that has natural go again in my Fi deck, I'm probably choosing the card that has innate go again, especially for those blue, like, late game slots. If you, if I'm having to choose between, I'm trying to think of one, like Soaring Strike. I think actually most of the ones that actually have conditional go again are actually only in red, if memory is actually serving correctly. So, you know, again, like, just be careful about the red in your build, because there is a lot of red in this set. There's a lot of red in this set. Yeah. And it's also a big trap.
It's also important. So a lot of your zero cost go again is link two or higher. Keep that in mind. Like, those are decisions. Like, if you're deciding to go five with your sealed pool, kind of what I would do is I'd break your, like, ninja cards up into goes again, like, natively, conditional go again, closers, and, like, see where things kind of fall, see where that cost curve goes, and, like, shove blues in as needed. 10 blues, rule of thumb, yeah, you'll probably be good. I would almost say err a little high on blues than even you'd normally think you need, because you don't want one frostbite to make you go full Joe Exotic.
Yeah, another thing is, like, if you see Icelander across the table from you, put in a lot more blues. Like, you're going to want to slot, even if it just means going over 30, like, have your blues ready to be slotted in, because you just might need them. Another thing that's worth noting about Fi is his ability. You know, a lot of people are, like, talking about how, okay, well, this is great because you get an extra chip attack in. Well, sometimes the best thing to do with that Phoenix Flame might be to just arsenal it. Like, get your three attacks in, get it back for free, arsenal it, like, end your turn, put it, like, nothing's stopping you from having a bigger turn next turn, especially if you push your opponent on the back foot and they're not really going to be able to, like, do anything about it. It's like, cool, now that I've, you know, guaranteed that this can go in my arsenal without any consequences, I'm going to slip this in arsenal, I'm going to pass to you, you're going to do absolutely nothing to me, and then now I'm going to have this crazy five card hand wombo turn that maybe I'm playing this Phoenix Flame, pulling back another one, playing that one out, and now I'm able to actually do the crazy big tricks. And if that lines up nicely, that might be a good way to close the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. I do think too many people push to play their entire hand when they should not, regardless of whether it's just recurring your Phoenix Flame and putting that in arsenal, or even it's just playing out that last card that you might be using to recur your Phoenix Flame. I actually think a lot of times arsenaling and setting up a bigger future turn is better. A couple of chip damage, especially if you're not presenting a lot, which in this game you're really not presenting a lot right now. In this limited format, most of the attacks are quite low unless you're able to set up these last things. Plus, the rupture effects aren't really that good, aren't really that stand out if you're really having to burn through and weaken your next turn to do it.
Another thing to keep in mind, mid to late game, is once you've got, you know, two or three of your Phoenix Flames out, you can pitch those things as well. Like, that makes, if you have that turn where you're going wide, you can pitch one of those for a red resource.
100%.
Like, it's a thing. Don't treat it as, like, it's still a resource in hand whenever you recur it. So, you know, you can Phoenix Flame for one, or you can red, you know, Dust Runner Outlaw for five. Or four. Is it a four? It's a four. I was thinking Rebellious Rush.
So I think it's important to establish that at least I, and you guys can say yes or no here, I think that if you don't know what you're doing going in to your sealed pull, I think it is almost always in this particular set going to be worth flopping down your ninja cards first and seeing whether you can make a passable deck, and then comparing the other heroes to your ninja pool to see if they are better or worse, but to always start from ninja if you are not an experienced player or not somebody who feels very comfortable playing the wizard or is fairly comfortable with what I think will end up being a very low health pool before you're able to crack back with Dromai, because I think Dromai requires quite a bit of setup. That's my thing before I really go into too many in-depth cards, and I just kind of wanted to try to hammer that point home because I know we're trying to be good to the layman type players, the players who are just kind of going out their first one.
I think Dromai in limited is actually going to be a little bit more flexible than in constructed, because while yes, setup is going to be required, your opponent's not going to be able to tailor their tools to deal with you efficiently. Like let's take ninja for example, right? Let's take both heroes for a minute. So let's take Fi. In order for him to whittle through the even just the Aether Rings, he doesn't have double Kadachi, which would be probably mm-hmm. something that if I were in a constructive match and I were seeing a Fi sitting across from me, I'd probably have two Kodachis sideboarded just for dealing with that. And I don't, he's not going to have that tool available to him, and that's meaning he's going to have to either expend a card or he's going to have to expend his weapon attack in order to get rid of your little 1-1 little dragons. So yes, some setup is going to be required, but I think that that pressure, if you get through that first early game efficiently, I think you're going to be fine. But again, speaking to newer players, I agree. Ninja should be your first point. I think Dromai is a second point. Just understanding that there are weaknesses to your little dragons, but their strengths are going to show more in this limited format. So, like, you know, they do have Phantasm, which does mean that if they put a 6 strength attack in front of your attack or higher, that it's going to pop it. I didn't see a lot of 6 strength attacks in this set, though.
5.
Oh, 5. Okay. Yeah.
Now, there is a generic that comes in for a 4, but you can buff it on the defense.
Correct.
Which indeed makes it equivalently the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's good if your opponent's willing to put something like that in front of these dragons, that's going to cost them almost as much as you. So worth noting that if you do get set up, you will be in a relatively strong position to start doing a good amount of damage if your opponent isn't dealing with your board properly. So I think my main two to be looking at would be Dromai and Fi if I were a newer player. If you're looking for a little bit of a challenge, look into Dromai's cards a little bit, understand the basic mechanics. Fi's gonna be a lot more straightforward for those of you who are just like, you know, I haven't really played much since Wraith, or I've played the Wraith Heroes, but nothing really much beyond that. Fi is going to be a little more on the level, I would say, the Tales of Aria Heroes, in my opinion.
And I'm going to be a teensy bit contrary on Dromai. I think Dromai is probably going to be your hardest hero to play. I think slapping down a couple bit of arcane damage is still effective in this set when there's very little to no arcane barrier. It's all having to be dealt with in Quell. So if you get enough arcane damage, I think Icelander becomes quite easy.
That's fair, but I mean, Dromai does have the Aether Wings, which do have arcane mm-hmm. barrier on them, so there is actually arcane barrier in that way.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's an interesting matchup because, like, you kind of...
It's kind of a triangle.
Yeah. Absolutely. I will say Dromai has the highest, like, defensive potential, probably. She has the thing that can turn an Ash into a Ward 4 or 2 or 3 or whatever. You know, the Aether Wings themselves can negate some of that, like, arcane damage. And, you know, but she's like playing a heavy Euro game. There's a level of fatigue, and you've got to, like, meticulously plan out how you're building your engine in the sealed pool. And honestly, if you don't have certain cards, it's not worth it even trying. It'll come down to what rare dragons pop up in your pool, if mm-hmm. any. So if sure. you get what's its real name, because I only know it as Uwu dragon.
I mean, I can pull that
Uvai.
Up for you while you continue to talk about
no Uvai. Yeah, Uvai. Like, if you pull Uvai and you know you can, you know, reach like maximum Aetherwing saturation pretty quickly, it's a dragon you're not gonna have to swing with. It has 6 health, so your opponent's going to have to, like, burn a turn to do it. And then you can just cram some generically, like, good generics and stuff to supplement that. Like, cool, you got a Dromai deck brewing.
So my issue is I think Dromai is fragile because it costs Ash to put them out there. And if you are not patient, that dragon is completely useless to you because Fi will pop one every turn with a Phoenix Flame. It's very easy to do. I spun it up on Tabletop Simulator. It's not hard to pop a dragon every turn, like, for no cost to you.
No, and that's why I think you have to have something like Uvai in your pool or whatever.
Well,
and
I think that's the thing, is that you're talking about Fi, right? I think Icelander struggles a lot more into Dromai. So I think we're really seeing in this set a big triangle forming of, you know, rock, paper, scissors of essentially Dromai is supposed to beat Icelander. Icelander is supposed to beat Fi. Fi is supposed to beat Dromai. I think, mm-hmm. generally speaking, that is the trend. Like, those are the matchups you're looking at when you're sitting down across from your opponent. If you're on the losing end of that situation, then you are understanding going into that game, you're in the hot seat. You're the one who's gonna have to like kind of work hard for your win. Doesn't mean that it's unwinnable.
No.
It's just gonna, as you mentioned, Adam, require more patience on your part to get said win. You know, it's
another thing to keep in mind when you crack those six packs. Statistically, you're gonna get at least one majestic, maybe two. And those in of themselves can be kind of your pivot point for your entire deck that you can build around, or they're garbage and you're like, why did I put this in my deck?
I mean, there are definitely things you can set yourself apart with. So for Ninja, Combustion Point, for example, is basically a Warrior's version of Rout. That's a great closer. I cannot imagine such a terrible Ninja pool that I wouldn't try to play around that if I could. I mean, there's a lot of good key cards, even some that are just in the rare slots for each class, right? That can really make you stand out.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
100%, yeah.
Honestly, maybe we should talk about some of those. So we talked about five first. Do you guys have any, like, if you were to just pick out one standout card for Ninja or for Phi here in this particular set, let's make it from the Ninja stuff, and then we'll talk about generics for Phi afterwards. But what would you guys choose?
Oh, like what I want to see in my sealed pool?
Yeah, what's something that would kind of like push you towards it? Whether it's, hey, I'm seeing a bunch of, you know, Cinderskin Devotion or something, so, or Brand with Cinderclaw.
The big ones for me would be your innate go again cards. Ninja to me is always wanting to be in that situation where it's like, I'm going to keep up the pressure. I'm going to make it awkward numbers where it's the fours and the threes and the fives. You know, you can't efficiently block everything. Something's got to give. Something's going to get through. And by leaking that damage over time, I'm going to get my win. That's what I always think of whenever I see what I'm trying to build with a Ninja deck. Now, that being said, in this particular one, having maybe a couple of combat tricks, some attack reactions, things of that nation, just to, like, close out. But again, you don't really have your staunchy, like, old hymns or bravos who are like, I'm just going to block everything and we're going to get to that fatigue game plan. No one's really showing that outside of even maybe Icelander, but even Icelander's not really doing it in the same way. So you don't have to worry about defensive cards. You have to worry about different things. So
she does have D react.
There are some D react type things in the set that are very relevant. That being said, though, it's not on the same level as a built in D react on old him or Guardian having some decent equipment that you can draft, as well as now all of a sudden, I have a card that blocks for six and, all my cards block for three, right? When you have a pool of like half your cards blocked for two, your ability to fatigue gets very different. The only reason that was like an exception for Oldham was because he had a built-in mechanic that allowed him to block more efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going fatigue with Phi, you're basically intentionally slotting in a bunch of your three-block generics, if that is your goal.
And three-block ninjas.
Yeah, and three-block ninjas. You're basically just trying to build your deck around as many three blocks as possible to do that and fatiguing out with your weapon. I think that's going to be harder to do from a skill standpoint as well as just from everything you said there, Drayton, as a card pool standpoint, because Phi in general is a terrible blocker. Terrible. I think, and maybe, I don't want to get too far off the picking cards here, but I think it's maybe worth discussing how many of the token that you include. The Phoenix Flames, so you start with one in your graveyard. I personally think I would recommend only putting one in your deck. Shay apparently is holding up three, so he wants three in his deck plus one in his graveyard? Or
I'm saying two or three. I think, because here's the thing. It needs to come off the combat chain and go into your graveyard for you to be able to recur it. The whole point of wanting to put one into your arsenal, which is, I think is a game plan you want to have open to you to some degree, is very important for setting up those bigger turns where it's like, I'm going to do something with Go Again, play a Phoenix Flame, recur a Phoenix Flame after doing something else, and now I've done two Phoenix Flames in one turn. I think that those turns are going to be very critical to his game plan, so you need at least two. The third, I feel like I would still go because there are a few cards. I'm blanking. I'm going to see if I pull up the one that I'm thinking of really quick. Like Burn Away. I think Burn Away, being able to just suddenly have a 0/4 with go again, blowing a Phoenix Flame after you know you have already three in the graveyard, could be very critical. So I think three is going to be where I'm going to lean towards, because I think it opens up more play avenues. And I don't think it's a card that like you're like crying when you see it drawn. Maybe if you draw two like your other two really, really early, you're like frustrated. But now you got all three of them in your graveyard, it's going to be fine.
Yeah. Once you have like all three in your graveyard, like you can treat basically one of them as like a pseudo resource. Like,
yeah.
Like no, if his ability reads like fourth chain link make a dollar, that's a strong ability.
For sure.
And my cards I chose is just I would like to see it like five copies of Ronin Renegade.
Okay.
Yeah, zero cost, native go again. It's just a head jab, and it's a head jab that has the word Draconic on it that powers everything else.
I like Duskrun or Outlaw better, but I have a similar vein.
Mm-hmm.
So my choice would have been the, honestly, the Engulfing Flame Wave. I know it costs a lot, but when it hits, you reveal the top card of your deck. If it's an attack action card with less than the number of chain links you control, you can banish it, play it this turn. I personally think even if you're only flopping one thing out there, it's a good card. You're paying for two. 20%+ of your deck is likely to be zero costs and likely to be zero cost reds. So even if it's the very first thing you do, you might get a free attack in there. So mm-hmm. I feel like it's pretty efficient, and it comes in for five, requiring three cards from another Phi to block out all the damage. Probably.
See, I think I prefer out of that little cycle, because there's a 0/1 and a 2 that all kind of played off each other a little bit on with those on hit effects.
Mm-hmm.
I still think I like the zero Rising Resentment the most.
Rising Resentment's very good. I completely agree with you. I think it's very good. It's my second choice.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move real quick to talk about that. You laugh because real quick is just not our jam.
Yeah. No. Are you just gonna pick our favorite dragon?
I was going to say, what cards would make you gravitate towards Illusionist in general? It's not going to be favorite dragon for me, but I'll let you guys go first on that. Because dragon is not what makes me choose Illusionist here.
Oh, no. If I get to Uvi or whatever in my pool, then I legitimately might consider going Dromai.
Yeah, I feel like Uvi is a big one. What is it? The
Thema or whatever that just tells Wizard they can't play the game.
That one only has one. Thema.
It's a 3/4 Thema. Yeah.
Sorry, I was looking at a different one. But the Necrai, just because it has seven, so it's gonna be a lot. You are putting -1 counters up, but you are getting Ash out of that. So again, like these two dragons that help you to create your board state, I think are two that you're going to be wanting to look at. They're both also relatively healthy from the get-go, so they're more difficult to just be immediately evaporated. That being said, I also think that having some like Skittering Scan, just general transform cards, are going to be something that where you're going to be okay, how efficiently can I, once I have Ash, then create my board state and go and pressure and be aggressive, I think is very important. So I'm looking at the Rake the Embers, the Skittering Sands, these are cards that I think are going to be very important to you deciding if you want to go that direction.
I was just going to say, Drayton hit my favorite with Skittering Sands. I think having low-cost reds are extraordinarily important here, but low-cost reds with native go again on them, just like Phi. I think one thing a lot of people don't think about with Dromai is that you've got to play a red to get go again on all your stuff, right? And if you don't have that red with go again to lead off, you don't really have a turn, and that's also what gives you the end game, right? At the end game, I can, in theory, block with three cards for nine and then play my red Skittering Sands and still attack you with every single dragon. which is just a blowout turn. So for me, those zero cost reds and those zero cost reds with go again are really the main thing for the deck. So if I had a few Skittering Sands, the dragons don't mean as much to me, I think.
It's also your red density.
I agree that, like, the dragons feel partially like a trap, but the two that I mentioned, again, they help you build that board state of, like, okay, yeah. now I have pitch a red and you're dead on board. You have to start spending time dealing with my stuff, or which then in turn gives me turn to rebuild. Because if they're blowing all their cards to just attack your stuff, yes, you don't have a weapon, but as long as you end the game with one dragon and they're out of cards, you still win.
For sure.
So it is kind of this efficiency battle, if you will. Jeremiah is also one that, you know, the more I consider deck building with her, the more I lean towards probably playing over 30. I think that would be one where I'd be hovering probably around 35 personally, just because I see myself expending a lot more cards building that board state and also defending. But you know, that's going to kind of come to what you pull and what you really think is most efficient for your deck. So
you also got it. You got to know when to look at your, like, what you pulled and just be like, all right, I don't have the density of, like,
reds
to pull this off. Which, like, I don't have
reds.
Yeah, I don't have, or the engine, because, like, that's the thing. You got to have, like, something to do your Ashwing engine. And if you're just banking on one Ashwing a turn, your opponent's not going to let you have a board. So you got to, like, get to the point where you can, you know, chug out multiples of those. So honorable mention, though, for me, red sand cover.
Okay, I like that.
Nah, it feels like having a good old D-react, and you get to, like,
worth noting to your point, Adam, red sand cover also lets you turn on that engine because it's an instant.
It does. Yeah, it is a wonderful card, being an instant. It effectively is that red with go again. So I like that as a call out. I think it's wonderful. Instantly, a card that I thought was going to be terrible and probably is in CC, but Transmogrify is wonderful in sealed and in draft because of the low density of cards that are likely to break your Phantasm in sealed.
Now, that being said, a card that I could see you playing maybe a copy of, but I would make people wary of, is the giant Colossus one. I'm blanking on its name, but it's like the 13 strength one, but it requires them to pop something.
Oh, Frightmare.
Yeah, Frightmare. Yeah. A lot of things that pop your thing. So, cool card, but this is a very different game than last time we had an Illusionist in Limited.
Yeah, it's unlikely they're going to pop it. If you have Frightmare, honestly, it probably sits in your arsenal until somebody pops one of your things. Even then, I mean, you're killing your arsenal for it.
Yeah.
Or you just put it in the sleeve.
It's a cool,
wow,
Majestic, cool. But
I think it's pretty unplayable and sealed. I tend to agree with you. Okay, so more Illusionist thoughts before we move a little?
Nah.
Now, do we want to just talk about draconic cards really quickly? So, like, generic draconic things, because that kind of ties into just these two. There's not a whole lot in this.
I mean, they are going to be some things that, like, you'll see play, like Flamecall Awakening. You'll, like, if you have it, like, it's solid. Like, I'd probably play
so
that.
So, one thing is worth noting, like, you can play Phoenix Flames in Dramai.
You can.
Mm-hmm.
Which, worth noting, that if you are sitting there, like, in Adam's shoes going, man, if only I had, like, two more red zero-cost Go-Again cards, then I feel like I can make this, like, sing in an endgame state. It's not the best card for that deck, but it is a card that is zero and has innate Go-Again and is red. So I'm not saying it's something you want to be including in your Dramai decks, but it is an option to get you there if you need to. So make sure you're aware of that in your deck building decisions.
I'd almost argue to throw three of them in there. Like, they
the
do
only,
what she wants.
The only reason I would argue probably not three in Dramai is because it does not block. And
it doesn't matter.
Sir, you and I have very different opinions on blocking. I know you live your ninja way, and you're just like, go, 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 go. But Dramai wants to block.
Yeah, Dramai definitely wants. They want to survive to a late game, in my mind. I could be wrong there.
Now, good.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think Breaking Point is generically good. Mm-hmm. It's got a rupture effect. It comes in for 5. It blocks for 3. It only costs 1 to play. No, it doesn't have any go again or anything like that on there, so that's a little bit of a downside. But I think I would play it in both heroes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's rare that I look at any of these other generic ones and I'm like, oh, in all scenarios, I play this in both heroes.
Inflame.
Inflame is on the line, yeah. I wasn't sure for me, but I do like that.
It's zero, it's red, it's go again. Like, that's why it checks all those boxes. If you happen to be playing Phoenix Flames, it's even better. That's why Inflame's like almost an auto include for me personally. But
I totally play Blaze Headlong.
I like Blaze Headlong. It only blocks for 2, but it's good generic card. I feel like Burn Away is primarily a Dromai card for me, and I'm Flame Call Awakening and Flame Board Retribution, in my opinion, are primarily Fi cards. Like, I'm not saying I would never play them in Dromai, but
I could see a reasoning for it, like, because you just want that Phoenix Flame out there to like tuck away or pitch for something, generate some ash. Like,
I mean, if you're tossing a lot of Phoenix Flames in your Dromai deck, you definitely want Flameborn Retribution. I mean, I apologize. Flame Call Awakening. You want them out of your deck.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think there's something. Like, it depends on the saturation you get. Like, these are going to be in the common slot. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah. Like, if you notice you have, like, a density of these ones that let you tutor the Phoenix Flames out of your deck or something, go for it.
Right. And also, like, you know, again, look for those synergies in the dragon slot, mm-hmm. draconic slot, because, I mean, like, let's say you have Flame Call Awakenings and you're looking at Dramai and you have Burnaways. Well, now Burnaways is your better Phoenix Flame late game, right? You want to pitch away your Burnaways to late game, use Flame Call Awakening to search out those Phoenix Flames, get them into your discard, and then you're starting off Burnaway to get your engine going late game. That's coming in for 4 now with go again. That's great. Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of little dragons afterwards, like, forget about it. Everyone's dead.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I feel the draconic stuff, like, there are, like, it's all solid. It does a job. If you want that job, go for it. There are only a few of them that are a little bit duds, but I'll also say, like, I mean, even Lava Burst, like, it's fine. I could see throwing one Lava Burst in there.
I mean, the nice thing about Lava Burst is it costs nothing. It comes in for 2 and it blocks for 3. So, yeah.
And worst case scenario, you play it on Chain Link 4 or greater and it's swinging in for 5.
That is not worst case scenario, but...
You know, I mean, if that's the worst case...
Well, no, like, yeah. Think about it. No, like, that's the thing, though. Like... you're gonna be able to get that off so easy if you're playing Fi. Like, it's literally a open attack, sword, flame.
How are you giving your sword go again?
Having it be the second attack.
If it's the second attack, it is you have met the requirement of having 2 chain links.
Yeah.
True.
Like, yeah, that's no, the thing, it's... is like a lot of people have been misreading a lot of the draconic and ninja things of like, oh, I need to get this to the 3rd or the 5th. No, as soon as you hit that actual number, you actually have met the prerequisite. So true, it is a lot simpler to get there than like Phoenix Flame. You just need some other thing and then Phoenix Flame, and now it has +1. It does not have to be the 3rd to get its +1 status. So, yeah, like to Shay's point, like getting to 4 in Fi, I think a lot simpler than Dramai. Now, Dramai of a board state, very different. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have 4 little dragons and you've done some sort of red thing to get the engine going, now suddenly Lava Burst could be a 5 very easily. But I think that banking on these rupture effects is not what you want to be doing when building. Having them and thinking about the fact that you can get there in certain game state scenarios, I think, is very fair. But I think just banking on them being there when you need them is not the gameplay. Again, I know Adam and I share a similar idea of whenever we're thinking limited, we try and think of like, what's the worst case scenario for our decks? How does my deck operate when I'm on the back foot rather than when I'm on the front foot? And so in those situations, these rupture effects really don't mean a lot to me. But again, it blocks for three, and then on its high end, it is very strong coming in for five. So, and again, on its low end, just coming in for two to close up a chain is totally fine in my book, too.
And I appreciate Rupture because it just indulges me in my, I refuse to acknowledge my opponent's ability to hurt me.
I can't wait till you have to deal with Frostbites. And it will warm my heart.
Well, that's okay. Speaking of that, let's get Frosty and talk about that wizard. I think there's a lot of cards that don't look sexy here, but raw arcane damage for me is amazing because turns out Quell can really only block one of those things.
That all said, I do think a bunch of her pool comes down to what you pull in blues.
Correct.
And what if you have the critical mass of ice cards, because if you don't have a critical mass of like ice cards to power some fuse effects, a lot of her cards become exceptionally mediocre.
Well, and
I mean, Aether Dart just deals three arcane damage. How are you blocking that outside of Dromai? And even Dromai has to pay a lot to do it. I just don't know that I agree. Like, raw arcane damage in this is good.
I think the raw arcane damage, because of the amount that she can get in a single turn with just like pitching a blue and coming in with a red attack and her weapon, well, not an attack, a non-attack that makes damage, if you will, because that is the big thing to be aware of if you are playing Icelander, is that your weapon is only available to you if you've played a non-attack action card that turn. Now, you can still do that on your opponent's turn using her abilities, but very important that you turn on your weapon. You can't just hold on to your blue and just pitch due to arcane damage on your turn, or pitch due to arcane damage on your opponent's turn. That's not how it works.
She's not Kano. She can't chain multiple things. Your limited pool isn't going to have the gas to do a ton of chaining. A lot of her turn is going to look like arcane damage thing, staff, tuck a blue in the arsenal on their turn, flip a blue for whatever effect, staff for three. Like,
so I don't know that it's even going to look like that in full, because I think there will be turns where you want a combo like that, but unless you're on like the real forefront of keeping up the pressure, I think a lot of times you're just gonna be activating the staff on their turn and blocking out with their other cards. This is why I think cards like, oh, I had it here a minute ago, and now I'm blanking on what it is. Please hold. read the ripples. Read the ripples. I think Read the Ripples actually is like a very important card in the Icelander set. It doesn't get her trigger, but it is a card that will guarantee that you will have a card in your arsenal next turn. That is what Read the Ripples does. Is it guarantees that card in arsenal. And that's going to be very important for a lot of the plays she's wanting to make. So I think because of that, this card, while I don't think I would almost ever play it in Constructed, I think very, very critical to her her gameplay in Limited. Another one is the Singe.
Yeah, Singe is huge.
Singe is going to be huge for the Dramai matchup. So, ironically, like, as much as like you want to focus in on her ice stuff, it's her wizard cards that say to me whether or not she's actually as playable as you might want her to be. Because having Singes, having Read the Ripples, I think are the cards that are going to help you to set up going into those, I'm consistently keeping up enough pressure to keep you off your back foot or to close this game. Because otherwise, I think that because she can't have the big, crazy, explosive turns like Fi can. And even if she is, it's not like you're creating those decision points for your opponent of like, hey, block this or die. It's either I'm either doing enough to kill you and you can't block it, or I'm not. That's going to be the situation the majority of the time. Now, again, Dramai has access to some arcane barrier. But again, a lot of these decks are being very red heavy. And so she's going to be able to block some of those situations very efficiently, others less so. And so it's going to get very interesting. I do think she's still set up to be the counter to Islander. Mm-hmm. But again, you're going to want to be thinking about how to set up your future turns consistently. And that's why I personally kind of put her a little bit higher on the thinking tree than Jermai personally. Because I feel like Jermai, yes, you have to think about how to set up your board. But if you, once you, you, that's the only kind of task at hand. Figuring out how you're setting up 2, 3, 4 turns in the future, I think is a lot more of a bigger head game. And I think that Islander, when played properly, is going to really require that. That's not to scare people away from her, because again, just a single Frostbite can just totally make your opponent be like, oh, I didn't keep a blue. I can't do anything. I'll pass.
That opening weekend. It's going to be very common weekend.
I had people do that to me in a ProQuest when I was playing Lexi just very recently.
Well, that's just funny.
So they were like, oh yeah, I have a Frostbite. I guess I pass. Because they just forgot that I'd given them a Frostbite token at the very beginning of the turn. And they did all their other math, and everything else was great and swell. And then they're like, oh, I have one more of these than I thought I did.
Yeah.
So, I guess I can't do the thing I thought I was going to do.
Arctic Incarceration is in blue. If you pull multiples of those in your pool, it is very much worth considering playing Islander, because being able to, on their turn, play out as an instant, create a Frostbite token under a target hero's control, and then hit them for 3 arcane damage is really funny. But yeah.
I have nothing negative to say about that. I like that play. I want it to happen for me all the time.
The other big one for me is I'm blanking on its name too. Can I find it efficiently?
I guess I don't know. She's not gonna have access to as many ways to like generate bulk like Frostbite tokens as she would with she had access to her full card pool. So you may be tempted if you see the thing that say like, oh, my Frostbites deal you damage now and things like that. You're not gonna be able to generate them like in large numbers consistently, so like that I feel is kind of like a trap Majestic. If you see it, totally sleeve it, because like, hey, down the road that it's gonna be great in your like constructed deck, but
yeah,
unless you just pull bonkers on, you know.
Now
I'd be happy to play it on
I would still probably play it, because it real quick, the card I was thinking of was Cold Snap. Blue Cold Snap I think is going to be huge, because it costs 1, which means you're still able to pay for your weapon, and it draws you a card. So it's already kind of playing into that engine of like resetting you up for the next turn, which again I think is really critical to her game plan. But worth noting with that, if you have that card out where if they have Frostbites at the end of the turn, then they get dealt arcane damage, you can use her ability in response to them passing their turn. So they've closed their combat chain, they've gone and done their thing. You're like, okay, if I can just tickle you for, you know, one more arcane damage, then I win this game, or like, you know, that type of thing. You can just wait, and sometimes that one arcane is gonna matter more than that one Frostbite. I'm not saying it's the most efficient way to play her ability all the time, but I can wait till you've already done everything you possibly do to break that Frostbite token and then just make a Frostbite.
Also, I redact what I said previously. I didn't know Ice Eternal is a rare. Like, you could easily get an Ice Eternal and, you know, was it Frost Hex in the same, like, sealed pool. And then you just get to be a bully. That's gross.
Well, another one is the weather, the Eisenhower Weather Vane.
Yeah.
Like,
that one's
good. The next time you ice fuse, cool. Now I'll ice fuse this thing and you have 4 Frostbite tokens.
Heck, man, even red Arctic Incarceration's gross. Like, just,
yeah.
I guess my turn is just going to be give you 3 Frostbites.
I mean, she has some bomb rares for sure. Succumb to Winter is solid. It's not that hard to get a Frozen Status out there. 5 arcane damage is solid. I mean, I don't know. I actually am very much looking forward to this set. I know we talked about there being a triangle, but
it's a soft triangle. It's
working hard.
A parabola of pain.
Like it's not like, I want to be very clear. Like, this is not literal rock paper scissors where it's like, oh, if you see an Icelander across from you and you're fine, you might as well just like scoop and go home, right? It's not that situation. But I do think that the basic mechanics of how Icelander wants to play versus how Fi wants to play lends its advantage to Icelander.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I think one thing we haven't talked about, and I think this is going to be important for newer players, who knows if they've stuck around this long as we've chatted, but is the Quell mechanic and the importance of how you're going to be timing it. I know this is maybe something we didn't even really talk about during spoiler season, Shay, because I kind of wrote off Quell as this not that interesting thing, and it isn't in Constructed. Like, I just don't care about it in Constructed. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10. Maybe I play it against Prism so that late in the... I still wouldn't do it. I can't imagine a situation that I do it, honestly.
There's it's no reason limited we're Constructed.
Yeah, it's here for Limited.
But in Limited, you could be very heavily neutering one of Fi's final turns. It may be one of the few ways that you survive, and it's the most efficient way to block something at that stage, right?
I mean, you can trigger it multiple times, correct?
You can, yeah. So, in theory, you could block 6 of Dromai's little Aether Ash Wings.
Yeah.
So, I think the timing of that is going to be huge.
The timing is huge. And the big thing for me with it is hit effects. Like, let's say you see your opponent, Fi, going off on this big... Like, they've set up this big, crazy turn. You're like, all right, this is the turn that's going to hurt. And, you know, now you can pitch into Quell to more efficiently block, you know, those particular parts of the chain link to not only block damage, but also be blocking hit effects. I think that's, like, the big thing for me is that some of these rupture hit effects can matter if they get to that point. And being able to block some Phoenix Flames along the way seems like a great usage of that. But again, yeah, I think it's there to help make those big turns hurt less by you being efficient.
Also, if you have a blue flooded hand on a turn your opponent looks like they're about to pop off and toss a bunch of damage your way, a lot of these cards defend for 2. You have 3 pieces of Quell equipment. Burn them while you got them. Negate as much damage as you can. Seems okay. As far as damage mitigation, though, so we have kind of a drought of traditional defense reactions, really. Outside, Icelander has access to one, and then there's one Majestic. But we have a lot of things that are coming in the form of Ward and just prevent the next X damage with Oasis Respite, Sigil Protection, and the one we were talking about in Dromai that's, I don't know, like Pocket Sand or whatever.
I wouldn't call it pocket. I think, it's sand cover.
Yeah, there you go. Sand cover. Same thing. And I think those don't discount them. They're not as good as having a D-React. Like, they're no sink below, but like if you throw down Red Sigil of Protection at like the end of your turn, your opponent's gonna be like, well, crap. Is it even worth me, like, you know, doing much here? It'll make them resequence, and then the Oasis Respites get a little bit of a heal effect on you, which is nice, and they can do some prevention to prevent those on hit effects. As a newer player, those are going to look like weird and clunky, and you're going to be like, I don't know, guys, do I want to do these? Yeah, you probably do.
Yeah, I think Oasis Respite is a wonderful card.
I am on the fence on how I feel about Healing Balm.
So the blue I think could be okay, and is then again it's setting up like that ability to use your weapon on your opponent's turn. The red, I think the one you never play is yellow.
Yeah.
Because it's just blocking at that point, basically. Blocking or making resources. The red versus all these heroes, most of the way they're running to win the game is through chip damage. And so, like, let's say both Fi and Dramai have means by which they can give the majority of their turn go again, and ending a big go again turn by saying gain 3 life doesn't feel that bad. So, like, I don't think it's like a big auto include, but I also don't think it's a card that just says like never play, because it's a similar thing to Sigil Protection, right? Now, like, and the thing about that I like about it over Sigil Protection, one, it costs nothing. It's zero cost. And two, Ward only works on the next thing that hits me. Health is forever. If you hit me for one, I still have 2 of that health left, right? So it's
easier to play around Ward.
It's easier to play around Ward than it is just general health gain. So I kind of like it, the red one of that, more than I like Sigil Protection personally. Now, I think there's times to play both of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think because of the amount of action point manipulation, I'm going to call it, in this set, because again, like, even Islander has, you know, ways to cheat around you. Maybe you play Healing Balm and then you just, you know, zap them with your weapon. That's still not a bad turn. You gain 3 life, hit them for 2 arcane, and stuck a card in Arsenal. Fine. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Now you're set up to zap them on their turn, too. Similar thing with Sigil Protection on Islander. I think, you know, think about how you're using these cards on your turns and how much they're disrupting or, you know, enhancing your play. And also, are they disrupting your opponent's lines of play, right? Because I do think that overall, they're getting a lot stronger in the limited format of making it so that, like, a lot of the cards that you might want to say, psh, this is just bad, I should never play it, actually can have a lot more weight than you might think when you really start getting to the nitty-gritty of like how each of the heroes in that set play. Would it ever play Healing Balm and Construction? Absolutely not. It is garbage in that scenario. But would I consider playing in a limited Islander, Dramai, or Fi deck? Absolutely, because I feel like I can make utilization with it that lets me play into the strategies I need to in that limited style format.
Yeah, when you're not competing against Sink Below, it's a lot easier to be a
a card that, you know, I got great play out of it in a limited event was the little lightning seal, like, amulet, and it was Amulet of Lightning, that was it, from Tails. I had 3 of those in my top 8 draft pool that it won me one game and almost won me a second one. Just because I was able to give any action card go again, and that mattered a lot.
Yeah, the adaptable nature of that is huge.
But again, I got past 3 of them because people were like, oh, it's a blue that doesn't block. But I was like, it's an action card. It's an action card that turns on my Rosetta Thorn, and that's all I care about.
Yep.
it's those little things, like thinking about how it plays in your deck for what you're trying to achieve. And that's something that is that's the beauty and trick to limited is you have to like kind of think outside the box and be like, okay, I have this hunk of cards. What's the best I can do with this hunk of cards? Because sometimes that hunk of cards is gonna be hot garbage, but you gotta turn that hot garbage into a masterpiece.
How do I build something out of this garbage?
Yes.
Important thing though. Speaking, it looks like Scar for a Scar is put in the common slot.
It is.
Yeah. So,
and it's a wonderful card.
Which I actually think, regardless of what hero you're playing,
you
definitely the reds. I could even see an argument at the very least having the blues in your sideboard.
I think I'd happily play the blues as well, especially in a Dromai deck, and Icelander deck. How did you feel about trade-in? Because trade-in is actually one of the somewhat unsung for me in this, because I believe that hand manipulation could be extraordinarily key.
I think it could be very, very, very good in Icelander, actually. Because I think she's the one who's going to want to manipulate her hand the most. That being said, innate go again, I think, is good for all the heroes. But I think the hand manipulation, I think, is going to be most key in Islander. Also, like, because I'm not huge on the discard a card aspect of it. But I still think that is a fair trade, if you will, for what it's doing.
Yeah, I suppose that is a good and fair warning that, that discard a card is very impactful in a limited format. It does bring you closer to being decked, and doing it too liberally or pushing in situations in which you're not really going to get much of an advantage can cost you the game very easily.
I actually like Sift and Limited.
Yeah, I think I would play Sift and Limited. It depend, again, it depends on the deck, but I could see it.
I think the blue just does work.
The blue, I think, again, like very... It's not what you would normally be looking for when you're building Islander, but I think it does fit into Islander. Because, again, you're getting to set up those fusion turns. You're getting to set up those bigger plays, which she might need to have the gas to close.
Yeah, I could see, like, I don't know. I could see it, the blue having a line of play in all three heroes. Just being able to throw two things to the bottom of your deck that you're like, all right, I don't need to see this right now.
And also, she set up your end game.
Yeah, it's also a blue that blocks for three. So, like...
That's true.
Like, you're not going to see... It's a rare, so you're not going to see a ton of them. But, like, hey, if you see a blue one... Throw it in there.
I'd probably play the yellows too, honestly. The red is fairly unplayable to me, just because like I honestly don't see where you're ever gaining a benefit.
I could see it in Dramai, because again, like you don't even, it's just a red go again at that point, right?
True. Yeah, if that's literally how you're using it in Dramai, 100%, yes.
But I mean, I could also see like turn one, like filter your hand, like
yeah.
Or turn two, like I could see it, but again, I think it is kind of a niche case that you're gonna want to get rid of everything.
But yeah. Other than that, if you get any red brothers in arms in your card pool, set those aside. Those are for your Dromai matchup.
Brothers in arms.
It's the six.
Oh, you mean flex?
No, there's also a two cost that has six strength in red.
Let's go over the sixes really quick, just
okay,
that way.
That's
so
fair.
Flex is not a six, but it might as well be. That's only fair. In the red variety. We have Findel's Fighting Spirit in red is a seven, and in yellow is a six.
It's a six.
So, now it's worth noting the blue. When attacking or defending with Findel's Fighting Spirit, if you have less health than your opponent, it gains. Gain one health. Never mind. I was misreading that. Icons are important, but I still think that's all right. Gaining health while defending is actually kind of good.
It still makes it kind of a block three.
Yeah, but I mean, blocking two on a two and then gaining one is better, right?
Could be huge.
And then you have Brothers in Arms in red. It's a two cost, six attack, defense for two, but you can spend a resource to make it plus two defense. It's just a better rally the rear guard.
Yeah. And I had forgotten that card. That is a really good call out. So we've named four out of the five. The fifth one being a Majestic, I believe.
Erase Face.
It is Erase Face, yeah. Which, I mean, I guess is a good card. But
yeah.
Erase Face.
As a Majestic, it's not that exciting
for
me.
No, it does work in Limited. Like, if you get one, slap it in. Because
it
turns out, turns out saying to these Draconic characters, like, your cards don't say Draconic anymore.
I apologize. When I say it's a good card, it's not as relevant for the six power discussion. It's relevant for why you say it's good.
Sorry. If you pop a Phantasm with this, you might have made a boo-boo.
You better be losing the game if you didn't pop that Phantasm. If you're blocking with that for Phantasm.
Don't do that. Use it for what Shay said to do it for. Blank Draconic.
Or blank ice.
Yeah.
Or blank ice. Yeah, sure.
Or blank
really blank
Lizard.
Anything.
Yeah.
Blank whatever hero you don't like.
I actually
erase
really like
their
the,
face.
I really like Fingdell's Fighting Spirit, though. I forgot that it was like a full color like swap.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think a lot of people discount it because it's a three cost.
Three is not that expensive.
It really isn't that expensive. You should be running enough blues to play it every so often.
Well, heck, man, if you're Dromai, you're playing it because you want to toss like half your hand to play it and
ash. Turn two, going pitch three reds, Findel's Fighting Spirit after taking a damage or something like that on their first crack
it's
turn
great.
Is fantastic.
take 7, generate a bunch of ash for myself. I'm happy.
Or also, even like turn the zero turn, the true first turn, Jeremiah doing that. Totally happy to do that, because I'm probably ripping most of your hand, if not all of your hand, to go to the discard for that. And that's like, blocking is actually really difficult in limited sometimes, because once you're out of cards, you're out of cards, and 30 is not as many cards as you might think.
Yeah.
Like, some people come from Blitz and like, oh, but it's only 10 more than 40. 10 more is a lot. 10 more, turns out, is 2.5 more hands.
Yeah. Fog Down, by the way, if you pull that in your sealed pool, you will, even if you don't win games, you will get to see the light drain from your opponent's eyes at least, you know, 1 or 2 games. So
it's expensive, but it is funny. Being non-attack action cards, lose and can't gain go again. I forget. I think there's another effect that I don't know off the top of my head. So
nope,
you know.
I think I just misread it. I think I read it as attack action
you're
cards.
You're thinking of, I think it's hypothermia?
Yep, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Which you could play after they've started their attack chain and then make them sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've pretty much talked about...
This was a chat, right? Like, we were just walking through a lot of the cards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you guys stopped me from giving every single dragon a nickname. It's...
You still called one Uwu Dragon.
There's Uwu Dragon, yeah.
Would you like to, before we sign off, would you like to pick another dragon, give it a fun little nickname, and then be required to play it at one of the sealed events this weekend?
Oh, I have to play the dragon? Ooh.
At some point, yeah. Like, if you see it, you gotta play Illusionist.
Okay. Oh, then...
I want you to pick a non-trash dragon.
A non-one? I mean... I like Kellogg's dragon.
Kellogg's dragon?
Yeah, Kyloria or whatever.
Alright, so you clearly nicknamed it before you told me which dragon it was, and I don't know which dragon.
See, the joke is all of them have nicknames. There's Ravioli the dragon...
Oh my god,
you're going deep down this tree.
And you had to explain it.
Do you not know who Azvolai? It's Ravioli, because he kind of looks like Ravioli in the name.
Azvolai, the lightning dragon that people have had a long-standing argument between whether it's lightning or ice. It's lightning, folks. That's a crystal dragon spitting lightning.
Ah, it's a Ravioli to me.
Anyway, okay, so, well, I missed this a lot, but my brain's going to explode.
Well, at this stage, we have gone long. It's been fun chatting with you guys. If people have listened to us or watched this stream, usually we are a little bit more on topic. Not a lot more, because we like to chat, but usually we're a little bit more on topic. This just happened to be one of these things we thought would be fun before we went into the weekend. We'll come back with maybe a little bit more of a focused here's how you do it and some feedback on how we did.
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. Shay winning with dragons. Me and Drayton winning with other things. I think we're doing a couple of them.
I'm
so
hoping I get to play Icelander this weekend.
I'd like to play Dromaya that I didn't feel bad about.
You guys are trying. I'm just going to like nothing. So I'm going to smooth brain it with Fi.
I mean, I would. If I get my way, I will play Fi one day, and I'll play Islander the other day.
Yeah, I won't force it. I'd like to play not Fi personally. I don't know why. I'd like to just play the other two. They look more interesting to try to make work.
Adam's saying he wants to think this weekend.
Go ahead, Adam.
I don't get to play in that many, so I want to play them.
That said, my regret is that Game HQ is a sealed and not a draft, Drayton. Because if it were a draft, I would get the joy of just messing with the draft pool.
They're pre-releases, so they're sealed. Yeah, but your Road to Nationals will be draft.
Dude, I feel so bad for whoever's at
my Road to Nationals
table.
I feel like it's going to end up being me, and I'm going to curse
it's
you.
It's going to be both of us. We're going to be one of us on the left of Shay, one of us on the right of Shay. We're both going to be just like staring at him like...
I call right. Right side.
You can't manipulate this, sir. There are printouts for a reason. I can just imagine us both right now just like staring daggers into him, being like, "We will end you. We know where you live."
That's gonna be really funny. And he'll just laugh the whole time. He won't even care. What's really funny is then he'll then probably beat us with the deck. And
oh, he will.
Better.
He will. Because we've been here before, Adam. We've been here before.
Yeah, I just channel the greater knowledge of the universe or whatever.
Oh,
gotta empty your mind.
I feel like you're the guy that I caught at a Nationals event shuffling his pack and taking the top card.
Okay, so side note, I have actually played with people who have done that in drafts. He did all right.
I played with somebody who did it, and he got second in our draft pod, which horrified me.
Yeah. Says anything, Gibbons back in the day, literally the magic decks he played was, we called it just, he played mono artifacts before artifacts were really good or did things.
So before we keep chatting, I'm probably going to go ahead.
Oh yeah, we should probably all jump off.
We should probably end this. So all right, thank you all for.
Yes, Drayton, thanking everybody.
Yes.
Love it. Thank you. Do the whole spiel, man.
Oh, now I got to do the whole spiel. But I don't know the whole spiel. It's my first time back. I forgot what the record button was, guys.
All right, well, then I guess I will go. Thank you all for listening. We've been Kidachi for 3. Of course, your support means a whole lot for us. We've got a giveaway going on right now. So if you're watching this video, you're seeing this post, please also go in. Look at our review of Reiner versus Dorinthia. If you like that post or comment on that post or like that YouTube channel, subscribe to it. All of those things will get you an entry into this. You can get up to 4 entries on that. So find it, and you can get a copy of the Reiner versus Dorinthia's classic battles. Whether that's just because you want the shiny foil cards or just because you want an extra one of Dorinthia's new attack, or if it's because you're trying to get a new player in the game, you know, that's not something we care, depending on which one you're going to do. We'd like you to have some participation here and also give us some feedback on our videos as we're really starting to kind of reinvest. We're also sponsored by Edmund Unplugged. They're our local game community and FLGS. And so they give us some of these giveaways, and they'll be helping us do some more of that in the future. So thanks again for watching, and we've been Kidachi for 3.
Thanks for listening and being a part of the Flesh and Blood community. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more, please share us, leave us a like or a review. If you want to engage with us directly, please find us on Facebook at Kidachi43. And remember, we are available for download on all major podcast providers. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you again in 2 weeks. Until then, enjoy playing Flesh and Blood.